CliffCentral.com.
Is this thing on? You're listening to The Bounce Show. It's live. Well, not this bit, but it's live on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, lads.
Sorry, scrap that, delete it. CliffCentral.com.
Good morning and welcome to it, The Bounce Show. Here are the 8th of June. 6th of June was about 2 days ago. Yep, welcome to it. Sorry I wasn't in the studio last week. I had some drone stuff to do. If you follow me on Instagram or anywhere, basically, you'll see that I'm really getting into this whole drone thing. It's amazing. Mostly for golf stuff, but I'll be doing other things as well, and I'll also take requests. If you think I should be filming more stuff with my drone, and you got some ideas, well, you know, I'm all ears. You know, I'm always here to create content for you, so that's something to look forward to. YouTube channel, The Bounce, get onto it, subscribe, or at least watch the videos, one of those two things. Again, like, I think the first rule of YouTube is you have to constantly punch yourself on YouTube, and it's like a new thing for me, so I'm still excited, so indulge me for a bit. If you hate the stuff, then obviously unsubscribe, and then we'll just never talk. So today I'm not letting you down. I've got two great guests. I've got Zelim Nell. Now, he is the editor of All Out Rugby, which, well, let's be honest, I always kind of share my sources if I get good stories, if I just use it for a good reference point. All Out Rugby is that place, allartrugby.com. There's it's a proper website. This, you can see a lot of money's gone into it, a lot of great personnel's got into it. Zelim is in charge there, and he is one of my favorite followers on Twitter as well. He's just one of those good guys that can balance humor with information, and he really does know his rugby. And the Bucks are about to kick off the international season as of this week, but something that really kind of drew my attention towards getting Zelim on the show. I've been wanting to do it for quite a while now, then I just get sidetracked. Memory of a goldfish, all that kind of stuff. But he has a really great theory about what should happen with Super Rugby going forward. So on All Out Rugby last week, there was a video basically that they put out. They put out some great videos as well. Basically studio time of them just talking about things, previewing fixtures, that kind of stuff. And Zelim had this theory about what should happen with Super Rugby. So people are talking about which teams should be culled. And he has a theory that kind of goes above and beyond all the noise and clutter that we have been hearing. So I'll share that with you. And then it's Champions Trophy. So I've got to talk to someone in cricket. And there's obviously no better person in the whole world than Dennis Friedman from Australia. He might be on a train. So we'll see how that goes. But that'll be later in the show. We're going to most talk about the weather. Because, again, like if you've been reading my tweets of late, how the hell England get to host cricket? Not just like the odd tournaments here and there. Back-to-back Champions Trophies. I get it, because they've got like big stadiums, they've got good stadiums, they've got good cricket culture, they got a good fan base and all that kind of stuff. But the weather is so absolutely shite. I mean, all these games, you think like, should I bat first, should I bat second, how's that going to influence the Duckworth Lewis? It's just such a stupid system to have all these games that are so pivotal. I guess the thing, you know, Champions Trophy, you play best of the best. You play three games in the pool stages. If you cock one of those games up, your chances of going through are very slim. But look at Australia. Both of the games we rained out. Okay, maybe it was a blessing in disguise against New Zealand because they might have been walloped that day. But against Bangladesh, easy points. Great way to get the net run rate up. Nope. Gone. Rained out. So I'll chat to Dennis about that and all the other nuances of the tournaments. If we do get him for enough time, maybe we can even go into the sort of Aussie player strike and their pay dispute thing. Because, you know, those guys, they can't be happy. So there's so much to talk about with him. And that will be the show today, I guess. So before we get into the big rugby chat and before we get into the big cricket chat, if you are listening live and you want to get involved, I always do make this option open, and then mostly I just forget to read the messages. But today I shall be diligent. If you are listening live here on CliffCentral.com, 079-748-2090, that is the South African WhatsApp line. If you go send me a message to that, it'll come straight into a screen. Otherwise, the Cliff Central official account on WeChat, or just tweet me at FollowTheBounce. If you're listening on podcast, which is, you know, always a smart thing to do in this day and age, well, message me anyway. You can tweet me at any given stage at Follow the Bounce on Twitter, or you can email me biggerissues at ben@thebounce.co.za. All right, tidy intro. Let's get into some actual sport now. So, as you know, it's Big French Open week right now. So it's the second Grand Slam for the tennis people, and it's the only one played on the clay. And the clay is always very cool because, you know, the points are nice and long. A bit more grunting, which maybe isn't the best thing, but it's all hustling up because we're now into the semifinals stage. And, well, there's so many great stories in men's tennis right now because you've got Andy Murray, who's the best player in ranking-wise, right? Now, you think you'd do well in the clay because it's also orange like him. But he's been up and down. He has a bit of a dogshit clay court season so far, but he's in the semifinals. He beat Kei Nishikori, which is always a good thing to do. So he's very much in the mix there. He'll take on Stan Wawrinka, who beat Marin Cilic in the quarterfinals. So that is a top-class semifinal matchup there. If you are listening to us later on and these games already have taken place, I do apologize, but going into the weekend, this is something to really look out for because the Grand Slams, when they're in Europe, which is really cool, so this and Wimbledon, it's all in the same time zone as South Africa as well, so it's very nice to watch this kind of stuff. Then in the other side, Dominic Thiem, well, he beat Djokovic, straight set 7-6, 6-3, 6-0, and John McEnroe was scathing about Djokovic's performance here. Now, we know that Andre Agassi is now part of Team Djokovic, but bugger all good it seems to be doing, because 7-6, 6-3, 6-0, that is, well, supports McEnroe's claims that Djokovic just gave up. So it will not be the dream Djokovic-Nadal left arm semi-final, unfortunately. Nadal will go through. He beats Corina Busta, fellow Spaniard, 6-2, 2-0. Then Corina Busta just thought, screw this, I'm out of here. So that is the semi-final draw of the men. It'll be Murray versus Wawrinka and Thiem versus Nadal. And the women's semis, well, you know, when Serena Williams isn't playing, call me what you want, but I don't get as interested in women's tennis. Because after that, it's just a whole bunch of women just mostly moaning. It's not the greatest sport for me. I don't find very, like, relatable sort of characters. There's no really great sporting stories. Maybe because just Serena's just been so amazing that everyone else does, even though they are great in themselves. Serena just dwarfs them all so much in story, entertainment value, all that kind of stuff. But to their credits, Ostapenko, she's through to the semifinals. She'll take on Baczynski. They play today, and their birthdays are both today as well. What a joyous occasion that is. And then Halep, she'll take on Pliskova. Now, Halep is the third seed who went to the tournament with a dodgy ankle, but she's powering through. So between her and Pliskova, I would reckon that's going to be a winner. And they play in the semis. So big, big action there. Kevin Anderson, he bowed out early from a South African perspective. So he's not there in the mix. So if you like tennis, there you go. Other big stories, well, Bafana, they are looking to increase their 17-match unbeaten streak. They'll take on Nigeria this Saturday. And the purpose of this is for AFCON 2019. Yep, it's always a big deal if Bafana can qualify for AFCON. So they need to win games like this. It's a really big deal. Stuart Baxter's first job as the new coach again. This is the second round, of course, because this whole Bafana coaching deal is very incestuous. You generally have the same kind of pool of people. And they circulate, much like golf courses for the Open. I think that's how it works. Interesting story from local football, though, is Eric Tinkler has decided to resign from Cape Town City and go to SuperSport United. This is a very strange move for me. Maybe Eric's just tired of taking 30-second showers with the water shortages in Cape Town. Maybe he thinks SuperSport United are on the up and up. Either way, Cape Town City looks like a really cool place to be right now. They've had a great first season as officially the club in the PSL. They've got some silverware. It's on the up and up, and I think he would have a lot of freedom. Whereas going to SuperSport United, well, I think it'll be a much bigger expectation, a little less freedom, but hey, this guy obviously knows the local lie of the land, so to speak, in football, so he'll definitely make the best move he believes is, and he believes SuperSport United is that. Baroka FC are currently with Black Leopards and Stellenbosch FC in that promotion relegation fist fight at the end of the season. This is rough. This is like the bar brawl equivalent of football matches because one of them stays or goes through to the Premier League. And Baroka are, of course, the current Premier League side. The other two are from the second league. And Baroka currently on top of that, but it can go either way this weekend. There's some big crunch fixtures, so look out for that if you are into that domestic squabbles. Golden State in the NBA Finals, they are just killing the Cavaliers right now. They've gone 3 up. So when the Cavs were 2-0 down, you kind of thought about the NBA Finals last season. You thought, well, that's nothing because LeBron's obviously going to bring it back. But now that they're 3-0 down, That is a bit of a worry there. So the Golden State looking to kind of avenge last season's loss. Yesterday was actually a really, really big day because the Blues took on the Lions, the British and Irish Lions, okay? I'll try not to touch on too much of rugby and just the basic headlines. But as you know, the British and Irish Lions do a proper test tour, okay, like a full-on old rugby series. This is what used to happen amongst countries, and it was really, really great, but you know, tournaments and commercialism ruined all of that. But the British and Irish Lions, there's kind of like a nice throwback from the golden era of rugby, so to speak. So they play a whole bunch of fixtures against the local teams, and then they actually take on the All Blacks in test matches. So they didn't do too well in the opening match against the Barbarian Invitational side on Saturday. They were saying there was jet lag and all that kind of stuff. Fair enough. But yesterday, Wednesday, they were at Eden Park in Auckland. They took on a Blues side, which is, well, New Zealand's fifth best franchise in Super Rugby, which doesn't say much for local their local standing, but obviously internationally, they're still a strong side. And the Blues won 22-16, amazing result there. And it gets pretty much, well, it gets tougher from here because now the British and Irish Lions take on the Crusaders this weekend. Crusaders are unbeaten in Super Rugby right now. It'll be interesting to see what sort of team they'll field and how strong they will be because their Super Rugby aspirations obviously are huge right now. But then, when do you get a chance to play the British and Irish Lions? It's one of those potential once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. The Junior Box are back in action this week. They take on Argentina. That's today, Thursday. Kerwin Bosch being reinstalled in the fly-off position. In other football news, Red Tube is making a move into football sponsorship. There is an amateur soccer, football, whatever you want to call it in America, and an amateur side there that sort of a couple of guys got together over a couple of drinks and decided to pitch a sort of bold proposal move to Red Tube. Now, Red Tube, if you don't know, and don't try to act like you don't know, you know exactly what I'm talking about here. Red Tube is the porn version of YouTube, so it's very simple. You go there, it's the exact same. It's just videos that people send in and upload, but instead of all kinds of things like cats and their holidays, it's just porn. So Red Tube will be emblazoned on the shirts of this team from Washington, and they're getting so much press for it. It's such an amazing marketing move, and good for these guys because maybe they wouldn't have had a sponsor before. So Red Tube going in there, and you also got to be a bit sort of mature and an adult like about sponsorships nowadays. You take the money where you can get it. I don't think sports teams nowadays, with how competitive things are, poor economies, all that kind of stuff, you can't be too choosy who sponsors you. But this is like a really proactive move. And hey, it's not going to make you do less or more porn if you've got any sort of self-control anyway. So before you want to get a prudish on me and say, well, we shouldn't be promoting porn, what if kids see it? The stuff exists. Kids will find it. Kids probably know more about this than we do. If you are listening and you are a kid, maybe don't go into RedTube as much as anything else, but you know what I mean. You can be your own boss with these kind of things. Ronaldo is still very much the richest sports star in the whole world. Forbes released their top 100 list, which is, well, it's cool to look at. It's also hugely depressing. And you realize how rich these guys are. I think it's over $3 billion is what the top 100 earned last year. This isn't their personal cumulative wealth. This is just their earnings for 1 year. So if you look back at like who has been the richest over a big stretch of time, obviously Tiger Woods, back when he could play golf, he was making so much money because he was the double threat. He made a whole bunch of money from just tournament play, but then he made an absolute crap ton as well just through the endorsements. Now, another guy who was there for quite a while was Floyd Mayweather. Now, Mayweather didn't have any endorsements whatsoever, but he made so much money from his fights because it was all him. So he promoted them. He did everything for them. So this time around, Ronaldo is top of the list again. So this, obviously he was there last time. He made $93 million in the last sort of 12-month period. LeBron James was second on 86, and then it goes to Messi on 80. Roger Federer on $64 million. He's huge in endorsements as well. Kevin Durant, also basketball, plays for Golden State now, $60 million. Andrew Luck, American footballer, $50 million. Rory McIlroy is the top golfer, $50 million. Then Steph Curry, $47 million. Of course, he's basketball. James Harden, also basketball player, $46 million. And then Lewis Hamilton rounds up the top 10 with $46 million. Just a crazy, crazy, crazy amount of money. But good for them, because they dedicated their whole lives for excellence and being there. And of course, Ronaldo, well, everything he touches is amazing right now. That Champions League win over the weekend is just another huge accolade. And just another sort of notch in the whole he's better than Messi kind of thing. I saw a really great tweet that the two accolades, the two things that Ronaldo hasn't achieved that Messi has achieved is Barcelona Player of the Year and convicted tax fraudster. Those are two things that he hasn't got to his name. That's pretty much all from the big headlines. If we've got time a little bit later, we'll touch on a few other things. And, of course, if you don't miss anything else out, then there is the Gareth Cliff Show every single Monday to Friday here on cliffcentral.com, where I do the sports at around 6:40 Monday to Friday, if you are listening to that. But we need to get into our chat with Zelim, and as promised, I'm going to intro it by just playing something that he did last week on alloutrugby.com, which I found very interesting. Let's cue that up, and then I'll get him on the line for us. Okay, sorry, just to intro this, he's talking about the big Super Rugby cull. So what happens to the two teams? Are they going to be culled? What's the future for Super Rugby? And we'll chat to him after this.
I think any time you start talking about cutting Super Rugby franchises, Bernie, you know, you've got to get out your box of tissues and have a little whimper, because the fans from whichever teams you're cutting are sad to see their team go, even though none of them actually go to the stadium to watch these guys play. I think the solution is cut all of the franchises. Get rid of this entire franchise system. Let's have SA Rugby responsible for launching four of their own franchises using broadcast money and sponsor money that they hold back to staff these sides with a management team that they handpick and with players that they offer Super Rugby contracts, provincial players that they offer two-year Super Rugby contracts. So let's have four franchises called the Hawks, the Rhinos, the Giants, and the Vipers. And let's have the sporting facilities in South Africa, whether it's rugby unions or whether it's other sporting facilities that can actually host these rugby sides, let's have them bid for the right to host a Super Rugby team for 2 years based on a business model and logistics. And let's pick the best location for these teams and commit to 2 years to having the Vipers play in Joburg. And that team is stocked with players that are chosen by SA Rugby and a management team that's put together by SA Rugby. That way, SA Rugby can control where our best players play, where our best coaches play. It creates pathways for everybody. For me, it's a win-win-win situation, and that's a three-letter word that South Africans can really afford to hear again.
Yeah, I don't think you can fault that. Hey, Zelim, you with us?
I am, Ben.
Wow, dude. Just a bit of constructive criticism. This is a fantastic video. I've seen this about three times. I think it's a great theory. But I think you've got to do without the tank landing sex faces. I think that's a bit much for the average viewer. I mean, you're throwing down some great rugby insights here, but let's keep the whole crowd together.
Now, look, apparently our listeners actually love that the most. That's the highlight.
There we go. I'm being so bloody opinionated. I didn't even know the background story. So All Out Rugby, you are very much the man in charge there. I got to say, it's something that I reference a lot from, just away from the technical stuff where I can find all the stats and all the other things that I can use when I run out of things to actually write about. It's just great to have an all-comprehensive sort of source that us rugby fans can reference, because I think a lot of the time we get caught up in these horrible, stupid narratives about certain players being shit or certain teams mustn't be part of it. But videos like that, I think, is a really, really healthy thing to have in the rugby landscape. So congrats on getting this all together, because I know this is a lot of hard work.
Cheers. Thanks, Ben.
Oh, no, long intros. Huh? I don't plan them. They just sort of come out of nowhere. But just to get onto that video there, now you speak a lot of sense about the fact that we need to look at things more like professionally. If you look at all the other sports around the world, I like to reference American sports because I think they've always had the right idea. They're looking to make money. They're looking long term, and they're looking to get away from the sentiment of, like, I mean, some NBA teams or NFL teams, they've played in like four different sort of counties. You know, the LA Raiders, I think, have been playing all over the place. I think they were in Vegas at some stage. So there's a lot of great, like, theories in there that you're throwing together. But ultimately, what do you reckon the reality is going to be with regards to the culling of these teams?
So that's a great question, and I usually start my replies by saying that, but it really is a great question because nobody really knows for sure what's going on. You know, we don't really know if we're going to cut three Super Rugby teams next year. You know, that's not a fact. We've spoken about it, and it seems like there's some pushback, and it might not happen. So you've got to wait to find out whether that's going to happen. If it does happen, we're not really sure whether it's going to be the Cheetahs and the Kings. It looks like it's going to be, but nobody's come out and said, this is what will happen. And then if they do get cut, we don't really know what's going to happen to them. They've been linked to the Pro 12, the Cheetahs and Kings have. And then you've got to wonder about what that actually means for us. The whole point of the cull is to concentrate our playing resources, which are limited because our best players are overseas, into four teams.
Yeah.
So if we all agree with that and we cut from six to four, and then those two teams that we cut go and play Pro 12, aren't we exactly where we started?
Well, that's what I thought as well, which I found quite confusing about this. Again, like most rugby fans, you know, we're just going to be speculating about the fact that some people believe they've already signed those Pro 12 deals. Other people believe that, you know, it's still up in the air as far as if these teams do get cut. And then if you're Australian, well, you're just crying about everything right now because I think that they're not even less than us. But it's an interesting sort of thought. Like, okay, so it goes against the whole purpose in my eyes, just like you've just said now. But what if the Cheetahs and the Kings were to now go play in Europe? First question would be, what do they offer Europe? This is my first thought was, I mean, are they essentially going to be bringing great audiences, great viewership numbers? I mean, help me out here. Are they a proposition that the Europeans want to go, oh, cool, we really, really want those bottom-performing South African teams?
So think about it like this. The Pro 12 has been talking about expanding west to North America, which would be a complete waste of time because there is no foundation for rugby in America whatsoever. Yeah. Even though they've got a massive audience. It's like saying we're going to take rugby to Russia. Yes, there's 75 trillion people there. None of them watch rugby.
Yeah.
So if they have to consider bringing in a team from North America or bringing in a team from a rugby crazy country like South Africa, I can understand how South Africa is a better prospect. Also, the Pro 12 is like the red-headed stepchild of European rugby in the sense that the Heineken Cup or whatever they call it now, the European Rugby Championship, is higher profile. The Aviva Premiership is higher profile. Pro 12 kind of plays third fiddle to those guys. So if they had to add a South African team, and this is assuming you don't count Saracens as a South African side, but if they had to add a South African team to the Pro 12, they would kind of have a USP there where they could say, hey, we're the Pro 12. We've got two sides that are effectively Super Rugby teams.
Yeah.
How about that?
Okay. That definitely makes a bit of sense. Now, as you say, they're kind of like a third fiddle, sort of like a Europa League kind of thing going on there. So if they were to say maybe bring in a few more high-profile teams and become like a Super 18, is that also something that could possibly happen?
I think it is possible. I just don't know where those teams would come from. I mean, if they could lock in the Crusaders, the Highlanders, the Brumbies, you know, the Sharks, I think that's, you know, that's first prize. I don't think it's reality, but that's obviously first prize. I'm not sure the Pro 12 has got the pulling power to bring higher profile teams into the setup. I think that's what the European Rugby Championship is all about. But this is a sneaky way of kind of achieving the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, look, again, there's just so many other questions here, and maybe that's not be your – this is the be-all and end-all of your expertise, but if for so long now, South Africa has been, I think, giving a lot to Sanzar. It's kind of been – it's like dating a model. You give and you give and you give, but ultimately she's just going to leave you at some stage.
Yep.
So Sanzar have been getting so much from SARU, and SA have been giving them and giving them, and Aussies have been taking, and New Zealand have been showboating. So – would South Africa be in a position where they could say, well, we can actually make something really great because we've already made Sanzar pretty much what it is? Is that something that the Pro 12 could maybe sort of seduce out of SA?
Yeah, in my opinion, absolutely. I look at it bigger picture, Ben. I say World Rugby has a product called rugby, and the All Blacks are their number one brand.
Yep.
Okay, and the Springboks used to be their number two brand. Who knows where they are now because they're seventh in the world. But the point is, for World Rugby, if South Africa said, you know what, we're actually not going to play Sanzar Rugby anymore. And World Rugby, for whatever reason, didn't open the door for them to go to Europe, World Rugby would lose a massive piece of their offering. So, you know, South Africa needs to grow some balls and just say, hey, we can beat everybody in the world if we really, really want to, and we stop messing about with all sorts of off-field issues. And if you guys don't help us sort out some obvious geographic obstacles that are making us get punched in the nose every season by New Zealand, and help us financially, then good luck, you know, keeping rugby afloat without arguably the second biggest powerhouse in the game.
Yeah, it's a very good point that, like, the whole thing about understanding what your products are, because once you lose the golden geese, because I think there's more than one, then your product is lesser off. And I think the All Black SA encounter, which has always been billed as the biggest thing in sport, like, just imagine if you take away Barcelona and Real Madrid from La Liga and say it's, like, not that big a deal anymore. La Liga loses hugely. So I think if South Africa went its own way, and, like, I believe this is a really great thing, mostly because I just don't like late morning rugby. It screws with golf times. You know, am I going to sleep in a man or not? It ruins my life personally. But if SA
went straight to the heart of it, Evan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are priorities. If SA went to the Europe route and we sort of became stronger in our own thing, it'd be interesting to see how New Zealand would survive as far as going on, because then they only have the Aussies. They might have to really respect the South Sea Islands. They might have the might of Japan to kind of then pull into the argument. It would be very interesting to see how strong they could be, because again, with that, there's less money. And we all know that with less money, suddenly guys start wanting to live in Europe. We're a prime example of that. But again, would that be like a fair sort of summation of what could happen?
In my opinion, yes, and definitely, even if they kept the money, if you are one of the 17 Barrett brothers who's about to play for the All Blacks, and you've got to think about playing Australia, Japan, Singapore, and Argentina every year for less money, or go to Europe and play, you know, South Africa's best players and the best of Europe, that would definitely be a big draw card. I think part of the allure of staying in the Southern Hemisphere for New Zealanders is playing the old foe, is playing South Africa.
Sure.
But now, if we were to then
ditch the Kiwis, we'd end up still playing the best Kiwis in Europe. So I'm thinking this is a big win here. I mean, look, I haven't really given this much thought. I'm literally pulling this out of my ass as we talk. But this sounds like a real way forward. Our guys will probably make a bit more money. The viewers would get a better sort of coverage time, which is really, really great. And maybe we'll get a new identity, because right now the identity of not being as good as the All Blacks, which I think is now being cemented in our heads, isn't working for anybody.
Exactly. I mean, my maths is terrible, but I'm pretty sure that the pound is worth more than the dollar. And if we start sharing some euros or some pounds or whatever it's going to be, financially we're in a better position. I think we could get to a place, hypothetically, where the Cheetahs and Kings are making so much money in Europe that they will actually have the best South African players playing for them, and the leftovers will be playing Super Rugby if we continue on this course.
That is a really cool thought. Again, like some people will find that like people who are really sentimental might be a bit put off by that. But this sounds like progress to me. Look, I want to kind of touch a little bit on the box. I know I haven't got you for too long. I don't think there's any use talking about what the team will be that's being announced today, because this podcast will then last for all of an hour. just looking at this whole test series with France, we know they're not going to have possibly their strongest players playing in this first test, but it's test 2 and 3, which will probably be when France actually care about the series anyway. They're going to be relatively good. From a box perspective, it's just, again, like so many different things going around about how shit 2016 was and what we're going to do. Realistically, what do you reckon the Bucs should be looking to get out of this series? I know a win is just the short answer and just getting some sort of credibility back. But Alistair Garcia needs to do something with the squad now. He needs to kind of give us an impression that it's a framework, a leadership role, a unit, all that kind of stuff. For you, what are the key aspects to get out of the series?
Okay, so when Heineke came in 2012, South Africa's defense was amazing. Everybody complained, oh, look, you're winning, but like, come on, we're not scoring amazing tries.
Yeah.
So in 2013, he came out with the phrase or the word accelerate, and the box went all out to go and score more tries, which they did do. They scored more points, but they leaked a hell of a lot more too. What I'm trying to get to by starting with that Heineke analogy is just that Alistair and this box management team needs to settle on some sort of hook to identify themselves with. I don't care. I mean, I've got my own personal opinions about how they should play. But ultimately, if they want to play Lions ball, then they must play Lions ball. And if they want to play Bulls ball, they must play Bulls ball. But there's no man's land that we've been in where we can't defend, we can't attack, we can't scrum, we can't line up, we can't XYZ. We don't know who our starting tight head is. We don't know who the fly off is. We don't, you know, we've got so many question marks in so many places. I just think by the end of the season, win or lose, whoever's in charge needs to have answered those fundamental questions. How are we going to play, and who is going to do it for us in which positions?
Yeah, and well, those positions, obviously there are some key ones that come straight off the bat. For me personally, I just want to know that the Springbok team has a good loose trio that knows who they are and what they're doing. So that would be my first thing. What's your big sort of point of concern?
Yeah, look, we don't have a scrum off in this country that can control a game with his boot, and that is a massive, massive issue. When you play test rugby, if you can't get field position, you're not in the game. And if you're asking your 10 to make all the kicks and you've got a new 10 every week, that puts everybody under pressure. So tactically, we've got to find a guy. He doesn't have to be Free Dupree, but he has to be able to control a game with his boots. And right now, the fact that Ross Cronje is the best that we've got in that position is frightening. You know, I mean, he's a hell of a good player. I'm not sure whether he's test caliber. But for me, 9 is a starting point.
Yeah, it is a kind of a worry. And again, they're probably going to try using Hochard at some stage. And he box kicks. I mean, He ends up looking like a box when he kicks.
I think he closes his eyes when he kicks.
I think so too. The tongue's out and the hair's just right. So he'll probably be carted off to the wing where he should not be used. He said it as much himself. So I'm, yeah, and then there's the Rudy Page argument. So yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about that. Andre Pollard, do you reckon he'll come back at any sort of stage this year? Or is that just one of Alistair Goodseer's sort of pipe dreams that he might still be the future?
So remember in the old days, we'd get a youngster come through and he'd really have to bide his time and he wouldn't get an opportunity. Everybody would complain about it. And eventually we'd slowly sort of blood him. Vanner Creef started on the wing for the Stormers and ended up playing fullback for South Africa. He played some flower. Yeah. So nowadays, because everybody's overseas, these guys, you know, have barely got out of nappies and we're starting them in test matches. And that's why you've got a guy like Andre Pollard, who's so young and has been injured so often, because he's playing this high attritional Super Rugby competition. He's starting every game. He's got massive responsibility on his shoulders. So I just think it's tough to really know whether these guys can come back from multiple knee injuries and continue to perform at the level that we expect them to.
Yeah,
completely. I think rugby increasingly is becoming about almost a conveyor belt of new fresh legs every year because everybody's so banged up.
See, the thing with fresh legs is they're also kind of fresh heads, and that's not great for the pressure cooker of Test rugby. You need some grizzly old bastards in there who can maybe make the tough calls or at least be accountable for some things. Yeah, it is a bit of a worry that you see these guys go down, and obviously Kerwin Bosch is about to be put through the ringer as well. I'm glad that he was given the chance to go still be a kid in the under-20s. I thought they were going to throw him into the French test out of desperation. Yeah. So I suppose that is a good thing. And then ultimately, like, do you reckon the box, even how they are and what they are right now, will be too strong for the French?
That's also a difficult one to call. I mean, that is a second-rate France side. It's the end of their season. Yeah. We're just getting started. We've had all these indabas and workshops and whatever. We're in the middle of Super Rugby. We've got some form. It's a tough one to call. They're playing away from home. They don't have a good record at Loftus. I think the Box, their best chance of winning a test in this series is this first one.
Sure.
I think if this is messy, and judging from the really team that's out there, it could really get messy. If this is messy, I think the series could really go downhill. The next one is going to be tough at sea level with that full-strength French side.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that they need any more pressure or any more expectations, but it's pretty much the biggest must-win of Escocia's career now in this next one.
Yeah.
All right. So then I'll let you go there because, like I said, there's no point speculating the team. I think it's only worth talking like next week at depth, which I look forward to seeing what you're going to write about. Just online-wise, anything to look out for over this series and, of course, going back into Super Rugby and the Rugby Championship?
So we're looking at all sorts of stuff, including the Lions series. We had Gary Gold's column today talking about how Gatland has dropped Warren Ball and sort of chasing an expansive game against the All Blacks, which is backfiring at the moment. And then obviously we'll ease back into Super Rugby after the series. Our focus is going to be this France South Africa series, and like I say, how we answer those questions. You know, it'd be great. It'd be absolutely brilliant if Ross Cronier comes through as a serious talent. If Warren Whiteley stands up as a skipper, if Franco Mostert can nail down the number 5 jersey. You know, if all those things happen, then great. But there are big question marks hanging over that.
Yeah, so many questions, but if you are going to find the answers, allatrugby.com. Zedim, thanks so much. It's been really great chatting to you.
Thanks, Ben.
Cool. All right, so that's rugby here. I'll tell you what, the more you talk about rugby, the more questions you get rather than more answers. I don't know if that's a great sign of where we are at SA Rugby right now, but that's not a problem. We're going to get into some cricket now. Yesterday, Proteas fans, a part of me thinks I'm cleverer than this, but maybe I'm not, because I went into this tournament thinking, you know what, the Proteas, they've got some great players here. They've got expectations, sure, like any good Proteas team would have, but I reckon they can weather this. AB's at a good stage in his career. Faf, solid goal. There's Hush. There's so much going on. And then yesterday, they absolutely choked the crap out of it against the Pakistan, who, let's be frank, they aren't a great side. That's what India showed us, and there's a lot of unknown people in this team. But like it always happens, we get to a pitch that's kind of spinning a bit. We get to a pitch where it's doing things that maybe aren't like they would be at the Wanderers. And, well, they can't ever use change of pace when they're batting. They really battle with that. And then ultimately the rain screws the Proteas on top of that. So these are all interesting things that always conspire against us. But this is how... this is how it always works as a Protea fan. But I can never bring myself to actually conceding all of this. So if you look at the log right now, well, it's not too great. We've got England. Just look at Group A quickly. England have been able to play games with no rain. So they've got 4 points. Australia played every game with rain. So there's no results. They've got 2 points. Bangladesh, they're not great. They've got 1 point because they've played twice and they've lost once, no result. New Zealand, they've played twice, lost once, no result. So that's how it's looking. Basically, this Saturday, England versus Australia. England are already through. Australia will then look to try pick up the last points at 11:30. Looking at Group B, India versus SA on Sunday, 11:30. South Africa has to win that one. And, that's just how it has to happen. There's just no doubt about that. We've got Dennis on the line. And to bring him into this, I shall play a little roundup of Australia's woes so far in Dennis's mother tongue.
मैं शेफ खान गौतम आप सभी का स्वागत करता हूं आपने लॉगिन किया है वन इंडिया यूट्यूब हिंदी चैनल खिताब की प्रबल दावेदार ऑस्ट्रेलिया के लिए मुश्किलें बढ़ गई हैं बारिश के कारण न्यूजीलैंड के खिलाफ संभावित हार से बचे ऑस्ट्रेलिया को एक बार फिर बारिश से ही नुकसान उठाना पड़ा मजबूत स्थिति में पहुंचने के बाद बांग्लादेश के खिलाफ आईसीसी चैंपियंस ट्रॉफी का उसका दूसरा मैच बारिश की भेंट चढ़ गया बांग्लादेश ने पहले बल्लेबाजी करते हुए 183 रन का लक्ष्य ऑस्ट्रेलिया के सामने रखा डेविड वार्नर 40 स्टीव स्मिथ नाबाद 22 की पारियों की मदद से 16 ओवर में एक विकेट पर 83 रन ऑस्ट्रेलिया ने बना भी लिए थे लेकिन तब अचानक बारिश आ गई और मैच दोबारा शुरू नहीं
हो पाया gripping stuff but it's not great for your guys though is it
Well, Ben, you might not believe this, but I can translate that for you if you like. Hindi's not the most of eloquent languages when it comes to being non-superfluous. But essentially, they've said the guy was saying, can you believe that South Africa, the number one ODI country in the world, choked against Pakistan? How did that happen? That's what he was saying.
Yeah, so it's pretty worth pointing out that you're on your way home now, and it looks like your train's running late, judging by what the guy's saying in the background. Oh, I think we just lost Dennis. Bless, how's it looking there? Is he still on the line? Okay, maybe he's just going through a tunnel. So Dennis, he's a hardworking man. He's a family man. He's still got a big job, and he's like the biggest sports cricket pundit on the internet. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he sleeps or when he sleeps, but he does it all. So, yeah, so basically Australia haven't been able to finish a match yet because the weather's been so shite in England. Now, this is something I touched on before the tournament started is that when you got a tournament that's going to come down to Duckworth Lewis, which, let's be honest, is not a great system. It's a system. But it's been around for so long. Surely someone could have come up with something better by now. And I don't think anyone has even tried because, well, Duckworth Lewis is just so complicated that the ICC probably wouldn't want anything simpler. Dennis, we got you back?
Yeah, sorry, mate. You'd think someone would invent a phone network that didn't drop out by now, but has yet to happen.
Yeah, who would have thought it? So what I was saying before we got really cut off there is, what was I saying? Proteas are crap. Something
about Australia, rain.
Yeah, so Australia and rain. Do you think this is a massive direct thing about England are just so greedy or they've just got such pulling power they can actually host back-to-back Champions Trophies despite the fact they don't actually have a summer?
Oh, geez, that's a good question.
Someone's got to answer it because
somewhere. You want me to answer it or not? Well, look, you have to host it somewhere. They're trying to find a gap, I guess, in the IPL in the T20 league, calendar now, and you guys are creating another one. So there's not going to be many gaps for this. And look, the reality is this might be the last Champions Trophy if the Test Championship gets up. Which is a lot of talk about in the next couple of years, and this will pave way to make room for the finals of the Test Championship. So it's a shame that we're playing it in England in June. I went and did my research, Ben, and England typically averages anywhere in England 19 rain days in June on any particular year. So, you know, well done the ICC for playing a tournament that requires sun and dryness in conditions like that.
Yeah, it's like saying, well, look, you know, we've got a couple of boats in a lake. Let's have a surfing competition here. I mean, it's you've got elements, but you haven't got what's needed. Like, it's as simple as that. No. You know, I still believe, and that's because obviously I'm a Proteas fan. So whenever there's any rain, the Proteas lose. I still believe that. Why can't you just take the Champions Trophy to the UAE? Give it a chance. Who needs spectators nowadays when everything's happening on Twitter? We don't care about the fans anymore. We just don't. We just need somewhere where bat can hit ball and rain doesn't help. I mean, am I asking too much?
Yeah, no, you're close. I think the obvious choice is Qatar.
Especially now, you're right.
You're going to have all these brand new stadiums, air conditions. What else do you need?
Yeah, I think the ICC are just getting too full of themselves here. They've lost reality, and to keep going back to England, and then they always go England and Wales. But let's be honest, I mean, it's not really a big deal having Wales. Why not bring Ireland into the mix then? I'm sure even they've got less rain right now.
It's an interesting thing, you know, if you're trying to take it to the world, you probably should do that. You know, we've had a World Cup in the subcontinent back in 96, which was Sri Lanka, Pakistan and India all sharing the load.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a bad idea, Ben. I think it's one of your better ones.
Well, I do have a couple from time to time. Now, just going on to the actual Champions Trophy now, and of course, England are top of their group. They've gone through because they've managed to actually hog the slight good weather there has been around. Australia now has to win. They play England Saturday, and then basically that should get them through. But as an Aussie, are you even into this tournament anymore? Is it something that really doesn't really like get on the radar because it's just it's a watered-down ICC tournament?
Yeah, there's a bit of that in Australia. Australia, during the winter, it's probably no different to South Africa. It's all about the football and the rugby, right?
Yeah, so
it's kind of just happening in the background. It's not on free-to-air television. It's only on pay TV. So it's really only there for cricket nerds at the moment. And to be honest, the Cricket Australia potential players strike is getting more airtime than the Champions Trophy. So it's only guys like you and I, Ben, that are addicted to ball sports that are watching this thing.
Speaking of the whole players payment thing, has there been any sort of sense that's come into it? I noticed that you tweeted something about Adam Gilchrist talking about how there's a fair offer on the table. Has any more sense got into it, or is it just mob mentality basically asking for what's not there?
I don't know how openly to speak, but stuff it, let's do it. What you've got is you've got a players' union supported by a very left-wing cricket media, and just they're all believing their own bullshit at the moment, and none of them amongst them have actually bothered to take a look at Cricket Australia's rationale for why they want to break apart the fixed percentage payment scheme.
Yep.
And the thing about the Cricket Australia board, it's independent, right? So it's not like the English board or the ICC where you've got partisan county members on there looking to get an extra dollar for their own state. We don't have any of that. These are all successful business people. And when they're turning around and saying the economics of the game can't be sustained with the current model, it's probably worth listening to them.
Exactly.
But David Warner knows better, right? So David Warner's out there blasting away going, we're going to go on strike. And Ed Cowan's probably the most articulate of all the players or current or ex-players. And he's making a case, but he doesn't quite get it. He sent me a few messages in the background telling me he was going to explain it to me, but never followed through. So Adam Gilly's been sending me a couple as well, but I won't repeat what he's been telling me. But you've got an uneducated bunch of players who have never had a real job in the sense of what you and I would call a real job. None of them have run businesses. None of them have had to scrape. None of them have had to concern themselves with 1.3 million casual cricketers in the country. And they're getting misled, and they're getting bad information, and it's turned into sheep theory.
Sounds just like politics. Politicians who never had jobs now talking about budgets and who needs to get what. They have no understanding of what to do.
Well, that's the next step. The Australian Cricket Association is going to hire your sports minister to drive this home.
Well, you do realise he's now Minister of Police, right?
Oh, it's not natural. It's a natural extension of what he was doing, right?
He got a promotion. So now he's taking to Twitter and basically saying, bad guys, watch out, we're coming for you. He thinks he's Martin Lawrence from Bad Boys now.
Gotta love South Africa.
Dennis, it sounds like your train's got there. I just want to, just before you go, catch up on the Can't Bowl, Can't Throw podcast. I know you had the radio show into podcast. Is that now a thing of the past?
Look, so the radio show that hired us went into receivership, which happens a lot when we get involved. So we're on a small hiatus until we find a new home, but we're not far away. I think I spoke to Kat last night, and our next show will be a Champions Trophy review in a couple of weeks, and we'll be hopefully back on a new radio station in the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Fantastic. Well, that's good news, because obviously we can't keep you down. You are everywhere. And I got to say, those you've got Bale clips that you are making right now are absolute gold. And I'm not just saying this because I know you. It's just that, again, you found a way of making your brand of cricket. You've packaged it so well. It's just so impactful, and it's entertaining, and it's funny as all hell. Well done on that.
Many thanks, mate. I'm looking forward to, I've been watching your while we're on this circle jerk watching your trip to sub-12-second running.
I can't wait for that. I'm finally going to get back in good shape. I realize I'm such a child and I've got no discipline. I have to have a fitness challenge. Otherwise, I'm just going to be so average. So I'll just
let you know that back in 1994, I ran 11.9. So that's your target.
Okay, that's it. 11.9, 1994. So what, you were how old back then?
I would have been 19.
19 and 94. Jeez, I had no idea you were that old.
Oil of Ulay. Works a treat.
All right, Dennis, we'll enjoy the rest of the commute home. Thanks for joining us today. And I hope the Aussies can finish a match, just because I wouldn't mind seeing Zampa's hair for 10 overs. That would be great.
Thanks, Ben. See you, mate.
All right, ciao. Yeah, so that's the Champions Trophy right now. They're huge games for the weekend. Now, England, as I said, are through already, but they'll take on Australia, which is always a big deal. And it's Ashes year this year where England will go down to Australia. So Saturday, 11:30, Australia has to win this because currently they've got 2 points and they need a bit more than that to go through. England are already through, so that's fine for them. But because Bangladesh and New Zealand are both on 1 point, England are safe. So, yeah, look, the group's open, but you think if Australia can just get a win there, they'll pretty much secure it, and that will go through. So those are two best teams from there. Group B, though, well, that really is just so wide open. Pakistan, they've got a win. They look like they can do something, especially on a worn pitch. Sri Lanka, I can't see them doing much. They're not a great side. They've got some more injuries. So it's between Pakistan, South Africa, India. India slots to play Sri Lanka, and they've got to play South Africa. But we'll see how it goes. Again, weather permitting. It's a horrible thing to say to a sporting event, weather permitting. But that is unfortunately how it goes. That's pretty much it for the show this week. Just this weekend, of course, SA versus France in the rugby. It is the start of the SA versus France series. As Zedem was saying, this first test, well, if the Springboks can't win this one, then there's some real, real big issues. But I'm talking real, real big issues. Because it's not going to be the strongest possible French team. The French are quite slow to be stimulated by things normally. So they'll need a week in the country to kind of, orientate themselves. So this is going to be the one. And then the Wallabies, they'll take on Fiji. They named a team today, which, well, just, I know it's drawing to Australian rugby right now. They've been so terrible in Super Rugby, but they can still get they still can get a few good players to get together and make a quality Wallaby side from time to time. This might not be one of those times, but it'll always be competitive. They'll take on Fiji. And there's some other international rugby over the weekend, but I mean, you're looking at weakened teams because the British and Irish Lions are in New Zealand. And they'll be taking on the Crusaders. New Zealand also then announced their squad this week to take on the British and Irish Lions. There's quite a few Barretts in there, as you would expect. It looks a very strong side. They are kind of sweating on a couple of injuries, but you got to think all those guys are going to pull through, because that's how these guys do, because they're so well managed that even when they do get injured, they can always bounce back within time. So Kieran Reid, obviously the big one there, the big concern. He did break a bone in his hand. He broke a finger or something along those lines. So he broke his thumb. So they just need to worry about those players. Kieran Reid, hooker Dan Coles, and centre Ryan Crotty. Those are the three big injury concerns in their squad. But it's a bloody good squad, and they'll have a little warm-up match. June 16th, they'll take on Samoa in Auckland. And then June 24th, now these are dates to diarize, because Lions tests, they're always good. They're always huge. They're great spectacles. So these games take place 9:35 in the morning. Diarize this now. June 24th, first Lions test, it'll be New Zealand versus British and Irish Lions in Auckland, June 24th. July 1st will be the second one, and then July 8th will be the third one. Those are your big sort of games. And then, but the next three Saturdays, SA versus France. That is kind of it. Go Proteas. Give us something to cheer about. I'm so tired of feeling like this. Blah, 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 blah. There's nothing more I can really say here. I mean, you got to the point where if this was a relationship, somebody would have walked out by now. It would have been us, though. We would have broken up with the Proteas if it was a relationship by now. But we carry on. For our sins and all that kind of stuff, we do carry on. Big thanks to our guest today, Zedem Nel from alloutrugby.com. You must follow Zedem on Twitter, and of course go onto the site. It's really, really great. I will put all this together on the blog post, thebounce.co.za. You'll be able to see the videos, all the different clips, and of course the details for my great guests, and you can then follow them. Otherwise, go on to YouTube and follow me on there, The Bounce. I've just started a thing. I'm trying to do a Dennis mentioned it just a little bit at the end there. My next fitness challenge is to run a sub-12-second 100 meters. Now, I'm 35 years old. I am probably not what I could have been physically in life right at the stage. And sub-12 is like a big deal. It's a big milestone. I'm doing it between now and November. Basically, I'm teaming up with the guys from Puma who, I mean, these guys, if there's anything about speed, it's them, right? They sponsored Usain Bolt from day one. They are sprinting. They are the people behind this. So they do these things called the Puma Speed Series. I'll butcher the name there, but anyway. They'll be doing an event in November. It'll be a track-based event. That'll be my moment. I will get a timed 100 meters on the track. So between now and then, I'm going to be having all kinds of different updates. I'll be filming my progress. I'll be filming different sort of exercises that maybe you can incorporate into your exercise routines. All things to shake it up and keep us in good shape through the winter so by summer we look like something rather than be having to look at something else. So the YouTube, just the bounce. Follow it there. And again, I'd love to get your comments because I literally have just learned how to edit things. So the stuff's going to be a bit ropey in the beginning, but hopefully it'll be entertaining and user-friendly from there. French Open otherwise this weekend. The final will be taking place Sunday for the men, Saturday for the women. Golf-wise, there's a St. Jude Classic in America. Of course, next week it's the US Open. If you do want to get some US Open chat, go to last week's podcast with Shane Bacon, who is my amazing guest from America. But the US Open next week, I'm so, so excited about that. There is a really cool competition, which I'll bring you the details for again on the Bounce of Sudos today, where you can win a really great prize for the US Open. And that's pretty much it. Otherwise, I shall be just jibber-jabbering from there. Thank you for joining me today on here on The Bounce Show. Catch everything else, cliffcentral.com. The Bounce Show has a page there for previous shows. Otherwise, go on to thebounce.today and follow me on Twitter at followthebounce. Right, that's it. I am officially all talked out. Thanks for joining me. Catch you next week. Cliffcentral.com.